Hey guys, welcome to Fitness Mentor's presentation of the ACE CPT online course. My name is Eddie Lester, here to get you through Chapter 17 PowerPoint lecture. So, looking above, this specific chapter is going to be on legal and professional considerations, meaning as a personal trainer, what is required of you from a legal standpoint and what is suggested as professional considerations in that sense. So, looking to slide number 2, as we're going to talk about specifically the business structure. The business structures, the one that most personal trainers start with, and this is just you as a person, you're ready to start a personal training business, you don't want to necessarily file any paperwork. What you are going to do is you're going to become a sole proprietor. So a sole proprietor is basically going to be a business owned and operated by one person. And what that means is that it doesn't literally require any formal paperwork or any paperwork at all, in the sense that you don't even have to register yourself with the state government. You don't have to register yourself with the federal government. You and your social security number are the business. Okay. You do typically have to get a business license for the city that you're working in, so there is that there. But what some of the benefits and drawbacks of a sole proprietor is that you're basically the main drawback, I'd say, is going to be the fact that you don't have an extra layer of protection around your business, in the sense that if you were to injure someone while working, it is 100% your responsibility as far as liability. So I don't always recommend doing a sole proprietorship unless you're just starting out and kind of easing into the personal training business. Hurting someone right away in the first part of your career is very, very unlikely. It doesn't happen too often, but just really setting yourself up for success with a business like an LLC can provide an extra layer of protection that allows you to feel more confident in beginning your personal training business. So that is one thing as far as a sole proprietorship that may not be the best. But most people, I want to start a business. I want to start training clients. Give me money for the training session. Just boom, you can do that without even filing any paperwork. All right, next is going to be a partnership. Partnership includes two or more people that agree to operate a business and share profits and losses. So yes, you would share the profits of the business that you're running. Not too many people choose to go into a partnership for just a personal training business, but maybe if you're owning a gym or starting a boot camp, that definitely can be a specific business type that would be better or do well with a partnership. But remember, you're also sharing the losses. So let's say you invest, 10 grand a person to buy the equipment for a gym, that if you were to, we'll say the business was to not be successful, you would split the losses just as if you would split the profits. And whichever way that you would design the ownership percentage is the way that you would split that. More about this, you should have legal documents established in order to determine the rules of operation, in a sense of who's required to do what, and so on and so forth. And then also general partnerships specifically is going to be a joining of two or more individuals to own and operate the business. That's just a general, that's your typical partnership. Other key terms around partnerships might be something like a minority partner. And a majority partner. Minority partner would be the person that owns the lower percentage of the business. Majority partner would be the person that owns a higher percentage of the business, or the most percentage of the business. Express partnerships are basically just going to be quick contracts between parties. Maybe not a long-term partnership, but maybe something short-term, like a weekend seminar, something like that. Implied partnership is basically recognized by the judicial system if individuals act as partners, in a sense that you may be working together and you're splitting profits, but you don't have any legal contracts drawn up. So that's kind of the implied partnership. And then limited partners, basically they're only liable for the direct financial contribution. Limited partner would be like an investment into a personal training business that you don't necessarily own and operate, but you are responsible. If the business was to go under, you'd just be responsible for your financial contribution. All right, moving over to slide number 3 as we talk about more about business structure. So corporations are next, and corporation is basically, what it's going to do is it's going to allow you to create an entity that's separate from yourself. And there's a lot of benefits to that, but it can be a little expensive and require more paperwork. So, but basically, the separate entity is something different than the people that are investing in it and or yourself. And the types of corporations include a subchapter S corporation. You'll hear S corp sometimes, but the with the S corporation, the profits are going to flow through the business to the shareholders. But the shareholders are taxed as ordinary income, in a sense that the corporation makes money, and that corporation pays taxes on that money, and the whatever the corporation gives to the shareholders, that is taxed as individual income for the person, not as a conjoined group. In a sense of, it's good that you can separate the taxable income for the business as well as the taxable income for the individual, because it kind of, in a way, cuts the total taxation down. All right, so most common for personal training businesses that don't operate as a sole proprietorship or partnership, most gyms, in a sense of larger gyms, your franchised gyms, Anytime Fitness, Crunch Fitness, we'll say Orange Theory Fitness, most often, the medium-sized gyms, I'd say, are definitely going to be S corporations typically. Sometimes smaller individual owned or individually ran gyms are not always a corporation. They could be LLCs or even lower or less, we'll say, business structure. So shareholders are shielded from personal liability. This is one of the biggest things associated with a corporation, is that you, the person, are protected because you are not 100% responsible for what happens through the business. So let's say you own a S corporation that is a gym, and someone gets injured at that gym. That person that got injured cannot go after your personal assets. In a sense that if you own a house, if you have money in the bank, if somebody was to get injured at your business, if it was a corporation, that person cannot go after your personal assets. So that's a really, really important thing, especially in the fitness industry where people are being active, people could get hurt. It's quite important if you are going to train more and more people and expand your business to have protection. With an S corporation, they limit the number of potential investors. I believe it's somewhere around 100 total, you aren't allowed to basically have unlimited investors is the main point of that, like larger corporations are, which we'll get into next. But there are also a lot of costs associated with the formation of a corporation, and ongoing costs on a yearly basis, as well as ongoing paperwork that needs to be filed around that business. So a little bit more work there to have a corporation, but well worth the protection. All right, moving on to slide number 4, an LLC or an LLP. An LLC is basically a limited liability company, and profits are going to flow through to the investors and taxes ordinary income, just like a corporation. But the taxes are significantly easier than an S corporation. But the main thing is that there isn't really a defined standard on a federal level for how LLCs should operate. So there's actually less paperwork, which is good in a way, but the federal government doesn't recognize the LLC as much. So if you're looking to expand into other states, it can get a little bit tricky with an LLC, as each state runs the regulations around LLCs. Okay, but more often than not, I do recommend an LLC for the personal trainer looking to start their own business, as there's a lot less paperwork and you still get the liability protection that protects your personal assets. So LLC would probably be the starting point for someone that's serious about growing their personal training business. All right, C corporations are next. Most of you will not be filing or open or starting a C corporation unless you have a very, very successful gym and you're looking to expand at a level that may include other countries. But C corporations are going to be, they definitely have the limited liability protection, but there is an unlimited number of investors. Most companies that are on the stock exchange are C corporations, as they have unlimited number of investors that can buy stock through them as they're publicly traded. But And more or less, C corporations are most important to companies that want to go global. Something like a 24-hour fitness is most likely a C corporation. Those large gyms, LA Fitness, anything that might be, you know, in Canada, in Mexico, maybe even into other countries nearby, that's when the C corporation becomes important. So, but it is a there is the cost of formation operations is even higher than some of the other business structures. Probably the highest, I'd say. All right, moving on to slide number 5 as we continue to talk about business structure. Independent contractors versus employees is an important thing to understand. An independent contractor, you're basically going to be hired on a short-term basis to do a specific task. You don't necessarily have the benefits of an employee relationship, which means you don't get, we'll say, medical benefits or any 401ks, things of that nature. But you do get the freedom of scheduling your own times, meaning like you create your own schedule. You are your own boss. The company cannot tell you when you need to work. They can't tell you how you need to complete your task. They just hire you to complete a task. That task may be training people as a personal trainer. So keep that in mind, that you should schedule your own clients and things of that nature, and they pay you typically more as an independent contractor because they don't have to pay the extra about 25% that employees make towards medical and Social Security and all that sort of stuff. So independent contractor can be a great way to go if you are looking to start in a small gym, definitely. If you're going to a bigger gym, like a commercial gym, 24-hour fitness, Equinox, LA Fitness, the bigger ones, Lifetime Fitness, that sort of thing, you're typically going to be an employee. An employee is good because you're typically guaranteed a wage of some sort. Most independent contractors are only work for hire, meaning they only get paid for the time that they work or train, we'll say. But employees typically get some floor hours. They may get minimum wage to walk around and talk to people and try to get clients. And it's regular work, meaning you're guaranteed maybe 15, 20 hours a week of floor time, and then whatever you train. Then you have a benefit of employees is the fact that you typically get things like a 401k as well as a medical benefits, things of that nature. All right, looking towards contracts. So contracts are basically going to offer an acceptance with an agreement of terms. Typically, this can be for an independent contractor or even with you and your clients, but you definitely need to consider, it provides a legal proof of the agreement that you're going into. That's what a contract is. And some basic information around it is the ability of the parties to enter into a contract with respect to legal age and mental capacity. Just keep in mind that if you aren't of legal age, you probably cannot enter into a contract without your parents' signature, that sort of thing. Most of you, though, are going to be of age. So, you will be signing contracts to work for certain companies. Just keep that in mind. All right, as we move along to slide number 6, we're going to talk about negligence. Negligence, you must establish 4 specific elements to be negligent. Okay, negligence is you're basically just looking at something that happens that is your fault and could have been prevented, but you failed. So let's read them directly. So the defendant is the person that is the personal trainer. So the defendant had a duty to protect the plaintiff or the client from injury. The personal trainer failed to uphold the standard of care necessary to perform that duty. Actually, let's go ahead and give an example on these. So the defendant or the personal trainer had the duty to protect the client from injury. The personal trainer did not, we'll say, spot them during a bench press. So that was the standard of care, and they did not do that. Damage occurred or injury occurred to the client. The person dropped the barbell on themselves or something. And therefore, that damage or injury was caused by the personal trainer's breach of duty, which was to spot that person during a bench press exercise. Okay, so that is what negligence is those 4 elements. And negligent acts can be of omission, not doing something that is safe and necessary, or it can be an act of commission, which is basically you take someone through a workout that might be above their level or is not recommended by doctors, things of that nature. The example given in the book and or here is that programming a full body strength training workout that includes loaded back squats, like a barbell back squat, for a client with osteoporosis is not recommended by the standards of care in your ACPT textbook and would not be recommended by a doctor, and therefore that you create an act of negligence because you did something that was against the standard of care recommended in your education. That's really like the main reason why personal trainers need to have a certification is really to prevent negligent acts of omission and commission. Meaning you need to be educated enough to know what to do, when to do it, and how to create a safe workout program for your clients. Okay, that's the main reason why it's so important to have a credential. And that really also shields the companies hiring you from saying that they hired someone that wasn't educated. If you have that certification, you're proving to them that you know the basics around preventing negligent acts from occurring. That's kind of the main point of these of all fitness certifications. Because you know when you think about programming, everyone's going to teach you how to program, but they aren't teaching you how to program to be the best program design person to get your clients to the goal as much as they're teaching you how to program to not create an unsafe program for a client. Because a lot of times when a personal trainer isn't educated in program design and somebody has an issue, that can lead to an injury or an act of negligence that would lead to legal action being taken. All right, so let's move on to slide number 7 as we talk about liability. So we're first going to talk about vicarious liability. And vicarious liability is going to be more or less when the employers or the gym is responsible for what the employee does or what the personal trainer does. So employers are responsible for the employment actions of their employees. So this is why some gyms have very specific training programs, is to guarantee that the vicarious liability is minimized. And going through the training program with 24-Hour Fitness is going to have very specific steps in order to understand what what is expected of you as a personal trainer at that gym. And that proves to be, we'll say, a safe environment, or teaching you the safe environment in their gym. Gross negligence is when you really screwed up. It's basically recklessness or willful disregard for the safety of others. I mean, this is, dropping a weight on your clients by throwing a weight at them or something. I mean, there's gross negligence is basically like that was really, really stupid of you. there's a lot of examples I could give, but just something that you, maybe you're just horsing around in the gym and you accidentally, throw a weight and it hits someone. I mean, just weird stuff like that. Stuff that's not very common, hopefully not too common. And then contributory negligence, this is when a client fails to notify a trainer of potential hazards. Let's say somebody has high blood pressure, they don't tell you. Or even let's say that somebody has diagnosed osteoporosis and they don't tell you, and then you program back squats. That's contributory negligence from the client to the situation that occurred. And this could prevent the client from recovering any money in a legal battle, even if a trainer is partially at fault. Okay. Next, we're going to get into legal forms as we move into slide 8. So legal forms, we're basically looking at things that are going to protect the trainer, protect the gym from legal action. So agreements to participate, informed consent, and waivers. So an agreement to participate is going to be basically the fact that, it's exactly that. A client is signing a document letting the personal trainer know that they are willing to participate in a program that the personal trainer designs. The trainer should have a process to formally warn their clients about potential dangers of exercise. That's kind of an informed consent as well as an agreement to participate. It's just saying like, hey, there's associated dangers with exercise. Or just as a heads up, here's a list of things that could happen. You may read these when you're going to let's say we're going to a trampoline park. Let's say we're going to a zip line thing. They have you sign a informed consent, and a waiver to release them from liability, saying X, Y, and Z could happen. It's not typical, but we want you to know of the risk associated with this. So informed consent is very similar to what we just mentioned, and it does not provide legal safety or protect the personal trainer or gym from being sued. Okay, because negligence can still occur even if somebody has signed these documents, and the gym still can get sued. It's basically informing the person of the risks associated with exercising, or the risks associated with the exercise program, or being inside a gym, things of that nature. And the procedures associated with these are going to more or less have a standalone document that a client signs, typically by hand. Hand signs it, and in a legal battle, you would keep these documents to bring to the court in order to prove that the client was aware of the dangers that could occur. But guys, as a personal trainer, you always want to utilize a legal counsel that specializes in fitness and personal training to develop documents for your protection. Let's say you're a private personal trainer. You want someone to develop proper legal forms. You know, a lot of personal trainers do go online and find generic forms that are used by personal trainers. Pay a little bit of money, have a lawyer look them over to ensure that they apply to the state that you're in, as well as maybe even the county that you're in, the city that you're in, so that you are protected all through and through. And that is something important to note, as well as informed consent does not provide legal safety from or protection from being sued. That's something definitely to know for the test, as well as the always seek legal counsel when developing documents. All right, legal responsibilities we're going to talk about as we kind of near the end here, slide number 9. So legal responsibilities for the facilities, equipment is a huge legal responsibility. Always regularly inspect equipment to make sure it is properly maintained, okay? Equipment is one of the largest areas of negligence that can occur. If a piece of equipment is broken and it's in a gym and a person uses it and gets injured on it, that is direct negligence by not paying attention to or maintaining your equipment as a gym. So that's one of the most important things a gym owner or a gym maintenance manager should do. Also, guys, if a piece of equipment is broken, immediately remove it from the training area. Okay, so, a lot of times, you know, you can't remove it yourself because it might be a huge piece of equipment, but you need to notify the manager and the maintenance person immediately and have them address the issue so that no one gets hurt. Also, guys, if you're privately training in someone's home gym, let's say a piece of their equipment is broken, like their leg press machine has a cable that's broken, or frayed or something like that, you should not use that equipment until it is fixed and approved by someone that has come to fix it. Then also, guys, equipment, AEDs should always be nearby. Some states require them to be in every single gym, and other states do not. But yeah, just have one nearby, because gyms are common places where heart attacks can occur because people are getting their heart rate up and they might be out of shape, or even older and out of shape, which increases the likelihood. Supervision is important from the managers to the personal trainers, as well as from the personal trainers to the clients. Always ensure safety is occurred or safety is present. And instruction, okay? When giving instruction to a client, you always want to, proper instruction is done by showing proper form, explaining the exercise effectively, answering any questions, or demonstrating the exercise yourself, things of that nature. But then also, one of the main things that ACE cares about is that you always want to give warning before you use touch to explain or instruct a client on an exercise. So sometimes the client doesn't want to be touched, so if you inform them, they can let you know that they don't want to be touched, and in that case, you would just use a different exercise as opposed to touching them, things of that nature. All right, scope of practice for personal trainers. ACE has a specific scope of practice page, or standards of care page, in their textbook and online that you can visit, but it's basically just, make sure you're programming effectively, providing safety, instructing effectively, things of that nature. Liability insurance, definitely something that you want to have as a personal trainer, especially a private personal trainer. A lot of times, employees inside the gym, like at a large major gym, they're protected by the company's liability insurance, but having some on your own is still important. Definitely if you're an independent contractor, they will require you to have liability insurance for most gyms. Employees and independent contractors should get liability insurance according to ACE, and that should cover personal injuries that occur as a result of a training session to your clients. ACE recommends up to $1 million is the typical recommended amount, as medical expenses can get expensive from fitness-related injuries. So yeah, $1 million in coverage is the best way to explain that. All right, and then as we get to the last slide, business concerns. Other business concerns with legal implications include things like marketing activities, ensuring that your intellectual property is not stolen and or somebody or you are using someone else's intellectual property. Transportation can be of concern. Financing can be of concern. These are more for the gym level or gym ownership level people. But just keep that in mind. Always make sure you're going by the appropriate standards of those individual categories right there. And then risk management. You definitely want to understand the risks and rewards of owning a gym, of performing an exercise, identifying risks associated with starting a business, and then also how to understand how to do a risk evaluation. That's in Table 17-2 in the textbook. And yeah, basically, because it's important to understand, you know, I'm about to invest in some personal training or some fitness equipment for my personal training business. How much is it and how can I make that money back? Through X amount of sessions, you know, manage each risk, create a business plan in order to create safety and we'll say a good business. And that includes things like avoidance, transference, reduction, retention, implementation, and evaluation. That's the risk approach, or how to manage a risk, we'll say. All right, so that is going to be it for slide number 10, as well as the entire chapter 17 PowerPoint lecture. Go ahead and listen to the audiobook lecture below. And yeah, we're almost getting through this whole book. Congrats, guys. We're getting close. Keep up the good work. Take the quiz. Complete the assignment. And I'll see you down below. Cheers.